For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Thursday, and we're going to pick up on the Brazil investigation that we started detailing yesterday. Now, we started laying out the players and what was going on a little bit, giving an overview. Now, we're going to go quite a bit deeper. And keep in mind, this goes back over 20 years. The election of Lula in Brazil right now, which ultimately is what this is going to be about, the state capture of Brazil, and round two of globalization funding. But to get there, you have to understand the background of this and how much money exchanged hands to finance globalism. This is how, and over 20 years is how long it's been since the plans were seriously put into place, waiting for the opportunity to happen to actually release it on the world. And we got that first with COVID and then with Ukraine. And they were able to essentially crash the world's economy over and over again and take away your rights. But where and when did this start? Now, you can look at a lot of different causal factors, but the actual money for the round of globalization that we're in now started in the global south. It was Venezuela, Argentina, and Brazil. Now, who's behind all this? I started talking about a man named Matthew Pagassi yesterday. Now, Pagassi is considered a rock star in the finance world. And by the finance world, I'm talking at the global level. These are the guys that buy and sell state debt. These are the guys that negotiate the loans for countries with the IMF or the World Bank. And these are the people, if you really think about it, you don't want running your economy. Now, let's face it, if you get paid on the larger amount of debt that a country carries, that's your job, do you actually want them to do well? What's the logic there? And yet it happens over and over and over again. And it was sold over and over and over again. Matthew Pagassi became the head of Lazard Worldwide. Lazard is the only real competitor that the world's largest banks ever had in this area. You know, we talk about conspiracies, but where we need to keep that in that talk is in a legal conspiracy to defraud or criminal act, things that can be backed up by facts. So who's Matthew Pagassi? Well, he started his career in 1994 at the French Treasury, and he was in charge of the debt and cash management of the French state. Great place to, you know, earn his chops. And he became advisor in charge of financial industrial affairs for the Ministry of the Economy, Finances, and Industry under Minister Dominique Strauss-Kahn from 98 to 99. He then served as the chief of staff to Finance Minister Laurent Fabius from 2000 to 2002. And then he left. And in 2002, he became the managing director at Lazard Investment Bank. Now, Lazard's chief competitor is a bank called Rothschild. So you have that conspiracy aspect in it, which we can ignore right now. He was appointed the global head of sovereign advisory debt in 2003, and he started working on some of the most important sovereign debt restructuring in that decade. Iraq, Ecuador, Argentina, Cyprus, Greece, all of that. He did all of that. He's also one of the most active bankers in Europe in mergers and acquisitions. And he advises on such deals as the $40 billion merger of Suez and Gaz de France and the L'Oreal buyback of Nestle shares. Now, what he started doing at the beginning of 2000 is when it became really important. But beside Lazard, he's also been very active in media, selling Newsweb, giving advice to Rupert Murdoch about Eurosport. And in 2010, he also became the co-owner of Le Monde France. Now, he sold Le Monde in 2018 to a Czech businessman, but during that time, he used the publication and its sister publication, Le Monde Diplomatique, to make inroads into the global south and countries that were there, namely Venezuela, Argentina, and Brazil, as this new socialist revolution swept the global south, he stepped right in. And in 2001, he started bringing his own people in. Now, we're going to go to a new segment in a second, and we're going to talk to TNT host and producer Didi Denslow after the break. And for a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio, simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction and truth from propaganda right here on TNT Radio.
Covering the world's news.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Didi, welcome. And what have we got on the plate today? What's the big news?
Oh, the big story. And George, I hope you are well. Good evening to you. The big story, we did hear her speech at the top of the hour, is New Zealand's PM makes surprise announcement. I wasn't expecting it. I'm sure most people weren't expecting it when it got up this morning, that Jacinda Ardern will leave her Labour Party without a leader in an election year as she announces her resignation. New Zealand's Jacinda Ardern has announced her resignation as Prime Minister and Labour Party leader, saying more than 5 years in office had left her exhausted and that she did not have the energy needed to continue in her role. Ardern announced the decision on Thursday afternoon, saying she had reflected on her future as PM during the New Zealand Parliament's summer break and determined she would prefer to spend more time with her family. I'm leaving because with such a privileged role comes responsibility, the responsibility to know when you are a right person to lead and also when you are not, she told attendees at the Labour Party's caucus retreat in the city of Napier. I know what this job takes and I know that I no longer have enough in the tank to do it justice. It's that simple. A recent poll showed support for the Labour Party at its lowest since she first took office in 2017 as the world's youngest female head of state, amongst a great fanfare when she got elected, but Ardern denied it affected the decision. I'm not leaving because I believe we can't win the next election, but because I believe we can and will, and we need a fresh set of soldiers for that challenge, she insisted. Ardern will leave the PM's office no later than February 7th, but will remain the electorate MP for Auckland's Mount Albert region until April. The next general election in New Zealand is going to be held in October the 14th. Deputy Leader and Finance Chief Grant Robertson was touted as, you know, the obvious frontrunner and replacement, but he has said he will no longer seek or he will not be seeking that position. So quite a surprise announcement. She's been an absolute tyrannous authoritarian for 3 years. I'm surprised that the New Zealand with the New Zealanders with their hacker hadn't been able to remove them themselves. Are we about to see, George, a changing of the guard? Is Trudeau next? Is Macron next? maybe even the UK Sunak, who's only just been selected for PM in my country. Maybe he's next. We see that Biden in the USA appears to be slowly being edged out of the door. Is this good news, or can we see other leaders come in who are worse than the current crop?
Well, I think what they want to do is instill fresh faces, because people are tired of looking at these faces that have brought their countries into, you know, turned perfectly good countries into hellholes. I mean, let's face it, is New Zealand going to cry right now? Would America cry because of what, you know, after what Biden's done to the country, or the, you know, any of the current Democratic leadership? No. They bring in new faces. They can bring in a fresh round of hope, and they can have another round of COVID or something.
I have actually seen rumors to exactly that effect, George, on social media from fairly credible sources, that that is the plan, that they plan to bring in new faces, as you have said. A lot of the public who don't really understand what's been going on for the last 3 years because they're not paying attention, we'll just see new faces. So for some elements in my country, Sunak was a great selection as PM, which is, you know, obviously crazy. And, you know, we could see them try to continue with the agenda now that people like Jacinda Ardern have been worn out and no longer have the authority or the gravitas to pull it off. Do you think that that is the route that they may take? Or, I mean, there is an alternative. Maybe they're running away. Maybe they're running away, literally, because they know the game is up.
Well, that is the one thing I don't see coming. And I'm getting into a Brazil investigation that show, you know, actually points to another round of funding for globalization is going to be released over the next few years. Now, if they gave up the farm right now, it'll be 20 or 30 years before they can get here again. Mm-hmm. The whole thing only works if they cause destruction and mayhem to economies and people's lives across the world. People will scream to have someone strong step in and fix the problem. And that's exactly what they plan on doing.
You think they're going to offer sort of genuine sort of, you know, strongman, authoritarian types, the type that we've always been sort of warned against? You know, the people get, you know, you think of, I forget his name now, Orban, the Orban or the Bolsonaro type character or the Trump type character who will garner support from the public, but act because of their strongman, authoritarian types, you know, the type that stands up, that appears to be standing up to the establishment, but actually these people are just going to be a continuation of the same. Do you think that's what's coming, George?
Well, I disagree about Trump. I mean, his position was actually genuine, which is why they went against him so hard. Now, the problem with this is, with the media labeling, we'll say Trump, for instance, that they did with him. He stood up for free speech, built the economy. He stopped wars, tried to protect the country's borders. Everything a president should have been doing, he was doing. He was just very loud and boisterous while he was doing it. And keep in mind that he was fighting an onslaught that is unprecedented in American history. No president had ever been attacked like that before. What I see now, I'm going to give you another example of a strongman, and you're going to laugh at me. Okay. Volodymyr Zelensky.
Yeah, I mean, he plays the strongman role. Yeah, he plays the strongman role. I don't know if he plays it very well, or do you think he does play it very well? Is it just for the people that aren't paying attention that he's playing it well to, the people who are waving the blue and yellow flags?
Well, think of it this way. The people that are waving the blue and yellow flag love him because he destroyed free speech. he destroyed every other political party. There's no dissent. He destroyed social media and freedom of thought. You either think like him or you're an enemy of the state. And Ukraine is taking away very actively people's passports and citizenship that disagree with any decision he makes. Imagine any other country, this happening anywhere. They illegalize Christianity. Now, what leader in your lifetime have you ever heard of that has done half of this?
Only
I'd say he's a very successful strongman.
Yeah, and you are right when you frame it like that. And the fact that we support him in the West is unbelievable, because in under any other sort of circumstance, let's just say Russia wasn't the enemy, then he would be demonized in our media for what he is doing, for being authoritarian, for being a dictator, and for restricting people's freedoms, whether it's religious or democratic, free speech, etc. Do you think he might then be a mold then? Could we see someone like Zelensky replacing Ardern in New Zealand?
That's up to New Zealanders. You know, eventually, yeah. But it'll probably be a toned-down version, because... Mm-hmm. The thing about Western countries is that this is a progressive thing. And I mean progressive in terms of it's inching up on you until they know they can make a big move, mm-hmm. like the COVID lockdowns. Who saw that coming? Did anybody see that coming?
Not at all.
So when we see this happening, you know, they didn't see this in Ukraine. Poroshenko was bad, but... Zelensky made it legal to harvest organs on his own soldiers that are killed. And you don't need permission from the families or previous permission from the soldiers. So they're actually worth more dead than alive in Ukraine, which is crazy.
Very crazy indeed. And I didn't know that that was actually happening. I thought that was just, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that that's happening in Ukraine. I thought it was just something that happened in China to the Uyghurs. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who does replace Ardern in New Zealand. Whether, you know, she's just being replaced because she's outdone her usefulness, or if we're going to see sort of a mass exodus of some of the leaders that have enacted the tyranny upon us now that it almost appears like the cat has got out of the bag with regards to what they've done, George.
Well, Didi, I want to thank you for coming on today, and I'm looking forward to our talk tomorrow.
Speak to you tomorrow, mate.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more on the Brazil story. Thanks again, Didi.
TNT Radio's Dirk Pohlman.
The new Pentagon report is out, the groundbreaking report, because now the American parliament is after UAPs or UFOs, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I was quite underwhelmed, right? Because they really managed to make this second UFO report even less spectacular and interesting than the first one, which already didn't have any information. And that is logical, because after the 2017 revelations in the New York Times, Washington Post, and so on, concerning UFO videos, there is really nothing new in that report. It basically consists of a three-page appendix that lists all the items that the classified report should have. For example, the number of UAP sighted in the vicinity of nuclear military installations, the kind of analysis done on health effects caused by UAP, some very interesting information, none of which figures in the unclassified report.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
Welcome back, and we're starting to detail the story of what it's like to take over the world, one country at a time, without actually having a coup. I mean, think about this. How smooth is that? You take over a country, and they don't even know they're taking over. They have no way of finding out. They just don't. There is no coup. There is no change of government. There is a massive change in direction, and suddenly your livelihood is well, in the sewer. And that's the way it is. But the good thing is you're all in it together, because that's the way it is. Well, one of the first steps to do this is you actually have to get into that country. Now, what if they don't, you know, necessarily trust you? I mean, who ever heard of a socialist banker, debt structuring banker? I mean, are bankers socialists? Really? Do you think so? Well, the sad news is, yeah, they actually all are. We go back to Giovanni Gentile's definition of fascism. It is the ultimate socialism. And bankers, by their trade, are fascist entities. They're in it to control whatever they're financing. Bada bing, bada boom. So Matthew Pagassi rolls around the world with people like Sean Penn on his arm, Hugo Chavez, the Kirchners, a whole slew of movie stars. He actually bought a rock festival and listens to The Clash, man. Yeah. I mean, hey, it can't be bad. He bought a rock festival, right? And then he bought Le Monde, which is, well, the biggest socialist paper in La France. And along with that was Le Monde Diplomatique. And one of Pagassi's employees, a man named Ignacio Raymonet, became the manager of Le Monde Diplomatique. Well, what is that? Well, it's a diplomacy paper, but it works with French intelligence. Very strong ties to another publication called Intelligence Online. And these publications, you have French intelligence floating in and floating out, and they're also sources. So we have the banker with direct ties to French intelligence seeking ways to get inside countries' finances. That sounds maybe a little obvious, right? Well, it's all about how you go about things. Now, Le Monde Diplomatique, Ignacio Raymonet is an award-winning journalist, socialist speaker everywhere, bar none. So what these people do is they really have no interest in publishing, but they use the publications to get into the places, open doors where they want to go. And Ignacio was famous enough to be able to do that. So what they did in 2000 was hold a big party in France while Hugo Chavez was there. And they introduced a young man named Maximilian Arveles, who just wrote this big paper celebrating Chavismo, Hugo Chavez, and the socialist revolution in Venezuela, man. Well, Chavez was so freaking impressed, he hired him to work at the embassy in France. Get a start there. And Ignacio Raymonet, well, introduced him to all the diplomats. Impressed by the young man, they bring him back to Venezuela. Now, Arveles is half Venezuelan, was born in France. So 2001, he goes to Venezuela, and he starts work as an advisor with Chavez. And at the same time, because they brought in him, they were able to bring in an entire team from Lazard. Now, curiously, one of them specialized in Russian economics, which ultimately is Lazard's goal, is to get into Russia and do this deal, do the same thing. Get in, corrupt, take over assets, crash the economy. So they started with that in 2001. Now, by 2007, Matthew Pagassi was giving the advice on the economy. Matthew Pagassi started controlling the money. And of course, everything went downhill from there. They actually put him on the board of PDSVA, which is Venezuela's oil company that owns Citgo. And from that point until 2014, $11 billion disappeared. And a lot of that money was given to foreign government officials, businessmen, and disappeared. It was a base of funding globalism, which is what they ultimately want. Now, while this is going on, I already said that Matthew worked for Dominique Strauss-Kahn, and DSK is, we'll call him, just, you know, for the brevity, Dominique Strauss-Kahn is a little too wordy for me this time of day, went with him everywhere. And as a matter of fact, he was opening doors for them and working hand in hand with them. Now, the funny thing with Pagassi, because he worked with governments no other bank would step into, they couldn't stand the stink of the finances in these countries. It was so appalling. He made a lot of money. They all did. Part of their pay was taking in assets. Part of it was, well, the big portion, selling the debt. Another portion was creating the debt to sell, which means keeping that economy idling. It can't be good. We need more debt. And every time they need a shot of debt to sell, the economy dip a little bit. And they would give it to them. So it works, right? Another part of Pagassi's strategy is to cover what happens if the general public finds out about us. Well, this wouldn't go too well, would it? Foreign people coming in, taking the resources, assets of a country. And by assets, I'm talking about energy, real energy stock, media, you know, any type of growing business, taking it over. What Pagassi would do, now, this was one of the first information operation companies. And when you hear that term, equate it with regime changer. You could also call it black PR with a punch. Because when these guys come in, it's all over. He brought in the original IO company, information operation company, Bell Pottinger, in Venezuela and Argentina and Brazil. And there was so much work that in Venezuela, they handed it off to Strategic Communications Laboratories, SCL. You know of SCL if you've heard of Cambridge Analytica. Cambridge Analytica got famous during 2016's election, which, of course, they set up to fail. Now, interestingly enough, Venezuela in 2012 was Cambridge Analytica's actual first job. We're going to be jumping away from Venezuela in a minute, but it's important to understand how this company functions. Because if you can understand that, how payments are made and such, there's a possibility that this money can start to be tracked when people start moving it during, what would you call it, a breakout? Like, a mafia breakout of a restaurant, take everything in the silver kind of deal, including the silverware. That's what they do to countries. Now, what they did and what they do is you don't actually hire these companies. You buy them. So you become the owner. So if something goes bad, it's on you. The other side of it is they move the company inside your offices. So money never exchanges hands because it's all done in one company. Now think about that for a second. And we're not talking about, $10,000 or $50,000 a month or, $100,000 lifetime membership. No. We're looking at over $100, $200 million a year that's not reported because it's never actually paid anywhere. It's moved offshore. So companies like SCL, Cambridge Analytica, if you look at their books, it's only going to show $57,000 at any given time. And yet, when it's traced through investigations of events, we're looking at one half of their payment at over $100 million. And then they doubled it because they were given an asset for that money, and then they sold the asset for that money. And then on top of that, they were paid. So you've got, money transferred back into the company that's owned by somebody else is just transferred and offshored and lost. Now you've got the assets like resources and such. And in those, very, very, very heavily invested, but it's done through other shell companies. Now in Venezuela, who started Cambridge Analytica, their first project? It was actually a former Lazard manager that worked for Matthew Pagassi. His name was Chris Patrick Tierde. He started the company with his partner, Robert Hansen. Now, the Hansens own the largest coal conglomerate in the United States. And they own most of it in Venezuela today. Now, from that position, they illegally took over all of Venezuelan media. And they did this with the blessing of the Maduro government at the time, because the media was owned by a couple of families who actually hated Chavez and did everything they could to either silence him so he couldn't be heard in his own country while he was president, or it was all essays and op-eds against them. Now, you're the enemy of this government. How much money would it cost to have you sell out at the request of the government you hate? Exactly, a boatload. And that's what happened. The whole thing was funneled through an illegal banking scheme that, because they own those all that media now, they ran it through the media company and then offshore. And in Venezuela, as I said, it's illegal for foreigners to own media, to own big companies like that. And yet, the owners of Cambridge Analytica, as of right now, are still listed as owners of all the major media companies, the biggest media companies in that country. And what they used it for was to build the narratives they wanted, to build the stories they wanted, to not just sway public opinion, to not to inform the public, but actual information operations where every story was designed to attack the psyche of the people and move it in the direction they wanted it moved. Venezuela went through this, and it was Maduro ultimately who put an end to it. Now, we're going to get more into that story probably next week when we pick this up again. We're going to take a quick break, but I want to use Argentina as the example because it's very, very clear. It's the same people, same small group. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I don't know whether Elon Musk is a good guy or a bad guy. I'll judge him based on his actions. And let me tell you, his actions lately have been rock solid. After calling ESG scores satanic, those are the environmental social governance scores that wokesters are giving the Fortune 500 companies. And you better believe all 500 Fortune 500 companies are now 100% woke, 100% in the bag for ESG, for DEI, the diversity, equity, inclusion. They're all in on it together. And good on Elon for calling him out. He tweeted today with regard to the World Economic Forum's gathering in Davos, Switzerland, WEF is increasingly becoming an unelected world government that the people never asked for and don't want. Elon, you couldn't be more correct. Nobody wants Klaus Schwab running the world. We didn't vote for it. We don't want it. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Do citizens make decisions based on evidence and reason? Or are they manipulated by behavioral economists applying nudge theory? In 1992, the Rockefeller-controlled Russell Sage Foundation launched the Behavioral Economics Roundtable. In 2008, two members of the roundtable, Cass Sustain and Richard Thaler, co-authored the book Nudge, which led to widespread government adoption of nudge theory through the Behavioral Insights Team. Also known as the Nudge Unit, launched in the United Kingdom, the Behavioral Insights Team now has offices worldwide, including in Canada, Latin America, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Singapore. The Nudge Unit boasts to have trained 20,000 civil servants and practitioners in behavioral insights. Supported by taxpayer funding, subtle messaging techniques nudge populations to normalize behaviors and attitudes deemed appropriate by nameless, faceless bureaucrats. The Nudge Unit plays on people's fears and guilt. It promises rewards for compliance in its projects, such as boosting vaccination rates and reducing energy consumption.
From smartphones and TVs to desktops, laptops, and tablets.
Pretty much everywhere, I hear.
All you have to do is tell your smart device to play
TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Now, we're going to pick up the story of Matthew Pagassi, which takes us into Brazil today, but we're going to filter it through Argentina first. Now, I'm doing this because this is such a clear-cut case of state capture. There's essentially no denying it. And you would not believe the unmitigated gall these people have, because Pagassi's people ended up in open negotiation making demands directly on Vladimir Putin in Russia during COVID. Now, before the turn of the millennium, this group was brought together by Pagassi, and it was on the basis of what if. What if they could enact state capture or state management of multiple countries, reap the rewards, and keep themselves on top of regional intrigues, serving their clients and countries? And what if they could get countries to enact policy that promoted their interests and investments instead of the countries? How about this? What if they could change national policies or leadership in nation states to reflect their Intel community's needs, for better or worse, whatever the needs are. You'll notice that, you know, with some countries, one presidency will hold them favorably, next presidency will almost declare them enemies in the United States. It happens. It's been happening since Clinton. There's been no clear-cut national policy anymore. Now, what if they could use BRICS members like Argentina and Brazil to open a door into Russia? Why would they want to do that? Well, the globalists want to break Russia apart and take Siberia, make it separate. And there's a whole colony of Ukrainian nationalists up there that if you empower them, they would love to do that. Make it a second Ukraine. It would be wonderful for them. Why? Because singularly, Siberia is, let's say it was its own country, in resources, it would probably be the richest in the world by itself. And we're talking not just, you know, oil and gas, we're talking gold, we're talking mineral wealth, we're talking, I mean, you name it, lumber, we're talking, you name it, it's there, which is why the globalists want to break it apart, because it takes a lot of the wealth from Russia away, as well as national prestige. Now, what I just talked about, what if Matthew Pagassi's accomplished all of this? And he's done it from the end of the Hugo Chavez tenure and currently in Argentina. Now, in 2020, Pagassi's man, his guy, Lazard guy, was a finance minister right up until July 22nd. Pagassi today is officially a cabinet member and advisor to the Ministry of Economy. Lazard is Argentina's financial advisor and debt negotiator. Ministry of Economy. Okay, now we started the show asking the question, what would happen if a guy who makes his money selling your debt to the IMF or the World Bank or other countries took over your economy? He loses money if you're doing good. He loses money if you do good. How did he get there? Think about that for a second. What if they could capture a state instead of doing a coup? See, if you hold all the purse strings, you really don't need anything else. Now, Pagassi, as I said, works with DSK and a man named Stepan Hooks, taking on debt negotiations and asset takeovers in countries other firms won't work in. Stepan Hooks is another Frenchman. He is the CEO in the fifth and sixth largest media conglomerates worldwide. So when Hooks wants to get a media narrative going, it's very, very simple. He just writes a memo worldwide, if you understand that. Who's his go-to people to make the narratives and make it work, deliver solid messaging, and bend the will of people? It was Bell Pottinger and SCL. Now, people say, well, yeah, George, they went out of business. Come on, Cambridge Analytica, 2018. No, they didn't. Bell Pottinger, Lord Bell died after they were caught for Africa, which this guy was involved with, by the way, too. We'll get into that at another date. But he also, as this company was folding, they started another company. It's called Sans Frontiers, Without Borders. Cambridge Analytica folded back into its parent SCL. although some forms of it still exist in the United States. And SCL took all the working parts and folded into SCL Insights. So SCL, the one that was in the news, is gone, except everything about it still exists under the same owner, under a slightly different name, doing the same business, but only a little bit more quietly. So you've got Hoops hiring these companies, working with Strauss Kahn, who's working with Pagassi to do all these takeovers. And it's an inside deal because they were doing it when DSK was the head of the IMF. So where's that going? Well, the IMF is funding this shit. And they're making money off it, hand over fist. And when at the first show we talked about this, we talked about gray areas between the law, extra legal. And that's exactly where they operate to do this. Now, if you're a globalist and you're looking to fund globalization and you can't take it out of state budgets legally to do this, because, you know, automatically your opponents are going to be right there saying, hey, what the hell is going on? That bill says you want to fund globalization, man. We're not doing that. Well, no, they don't need to. See, they do it between the lines. It never gets written up. The money just changes hands. And in this case with Pagassi, all through the 2000s into the mid-2010s, they were doing this with suitcases. Literally, suitcases. Going on planes, suitcases, going on trains. Suitcases being shipped, what, I don't know, you know, what's a great carrier to put a suitcase on full of money? That's what they were doing. Offshoring it to different banks. I mean, you wouldn't think of anything as crude as putting money in a suitcase, right? Well, you should have told them that, because that's actually what they were caught with too. So you've got all that going on, but okay, now we've established that Pagassi is running Argentina. It's his country, state capture. But how did they get there? Well, Pagassi's guys, I told you that they use media to get inroads. And in the first show about this, we talked about using celebrities. And Pagassi's two guys are producers. Now, you may not be familiar with the names of Max Arveles and Fernando Zulichin, but you are familiar with their work. Did you ever see that movie, Malcolm X? That's where Fernando Zulichin made his name. And that's where he got in with the first connection he needed to make, which was South Africa's Nelson Mandela, which opened all kinds of doors for this guy. And, of course, Lazard moved right in. Max Alvarez was in government until they crashed it in the mid-2010s in Venezuela, moved into film production, and his first one, Snowden. He did the interviews with Russian President Vladimir Putin, him and Zulichin. How did he get there? Now, we'll talk about Alvarez next week. But Pagassi brought along Fernando Zulichin through his contacts with South Africa's Mandela, and they built from there. See, now this movie producer could bring in all kinds of movie stars. It started with Danny Glover, and it just went on and on and on and on and on. I mean, that private jets full of people flying down to the global south. That's what was going on. And all it was doing was making star-struck people, leaders that needed good press, positive press for their countries, thinking that these people are actually trying to help them. And the celebrities, for the most part, had no idea. Some of them grew into it. They like it. And, you know, which is a shame. But most of them had no idea that they were being used by this fascist banker. Sulichin was introduced in 2005 to Nestor Kirchner and Alberto Fernandez, leaders of Argentina, while they were visiting Paris at the Maurice Hotel at a function. And it was Ignacio Raymonet, Degassi's guy, that did it. By 2007, Sulichin flew to attend Cristina Kirchner's inauguration in Hugo Chavez's plane. Now, this is the first real record of him being in diplomatic spheres. Before that, he was a middleman bringing celebrities into the Chavez regime, bringing them to Brazil with the Silva, bringing people. And all the time, Bagassi's behind getting a hold of the finance systems of these countries. When Max Arveles was given the embassy in Brazil, he was actually made the ambassador. This is, today is Bagassi's partner, both of these men. The two set up the crimes that ended up in the investigation called Lava Jato or Operation Car Wash. And that investigation took down 9 Latin American presidencies. Money from that was actually used to fund globalization in a big way. Now, how there are a lot of details in between this that, you know, it takes time to unpack. We've got 4 minutes left to the show, and we've got a few hours left to talk. But you're starting to see that it took a lot of time. So from 2005 to 2020, even though Matthew Pagassi actually is the owner of Argentina, it took till 2020 before he was officially on the Argentine payroll as a finance minister or the advisor to the finance ministry, until he officially could control the economy. This is what's going on in Brazil. This happened in Venezuela, and that story is a head spinner. It's honestly, it is like The Exorcist. When you get through all the detail in that, it is like, you know, there's head spinning demons on the bed right in front of you. And you realize as the detail opens up that it's not conspiracies. I hate conspiracies. It's criminal conspiracy, which is a group of people planning to do criminal things. But these people either legalize it first, or they make sure there's enough room in between law and protections that gives them the wiggle room so they can get in and out and rob the future of countries blind for decades to come. Leave those countries, if they decide to put them out, leave those countries so broke, it'll be nothing but coup after coup after coup, or that's what they attempt to do. And hell, they tried to do that in Venezuela. Can you imagine taking 9 presidencies down at the same time for the same crime? And your guy is the bag man in those crimes? Never. You know, he's investigated, but he's let go. Why? Because, honestly, they were protecting him for this. And it's Matthew Pagassi's partner, Maximiliano Alvarez. We're going to pick this up on Monday. Tomorrow, we've got a great guest coming in. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio. Thank you for coming in today.